You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, and welcome to your special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. Dan, would you go to bed?
All right, every time.
Every time we're recording, Alexa comes on and says, it's now your bedtime.
How else do I get my beauty sleep? You see, that's it.
Oh, don't worry, something else will go wrong soon.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure, Martin. They don't do this. It's more professional on the English Heritage Podcast, isn't it?
Oh, it's all pre-recorded.
Well, so is this. We'll cut out all the crap. Hello, Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order, please? I see. The special it is. We will be there to deliver ASAP. Pizza Podcast, special delivery. Hello and welcome to your special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. I am Paul from the UK and with me today is...
Dan in the UK.
Sean in Canada.
And we are here to serve you a very special and very delicious slice of life. And what do I mean by that? Well, today we are going to be talking about Robin Hood, the man, the myth, the legend. So first of all, guys, Sean, Dan, what are your recollections of Robin Hood? What are your first early memories of him? What are the first film that you may have seen? That sort of thing.
Probably the cartoons. Was it Disney maybe? I'm not sure what it was, but, yeah, just cartoons. I never watched the Kevin Costner film. I never watched the Men in Tights. For a long time, I did not like period pieces, so I avoided it, and now I've just never watched it. But I've suddenly gotten into history podcasts over the last several months, so I think now I'm ready to learn more.
Excellent. Dan? Mm.
Yeah, for me, I started on Disney. That's what I grew up on with the Disney Fox, and you know, it was sort of like Aesop's Fables, so I was reading those at the same time, so it kind of went in with bedtime stories and that sort of thing, and I was also getting into Merlin mythology as well, so you know, Merlin and Arthur and all this sort of thing, so all of that all combined, that's got me started. But I was kind of growing up when it was all starting to be parodied as well, so we had the big Kevin Costner movie that had proven such a huge hit, and we had the Brian the song that had gone into the charts for God knows how many years, but because of it was so successful, it became parodied throughout everything. So on BBC One there was the Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, which was sort of the parody kids show where it was actually Maid Marian who did all the things and Robin Hood just got all the credit because he was a bloke, or it was lots of other things, and Men in Tights and lots of other things. And then I went back and watched the Errol Flynn's, and eventually saw the Russell Crowe, which was the most recent one, and of course there is the Star Trek episode, being a Star Trek fan as we all are, there is the Star Trek episode where the Q sends them to Nottingham so that Captain Picard can learn to fall in love. All this, yeah, there he is on the corner, and, exactly. And Worf says he's not a merry man, all this sort of stuff, but again it's another parody, so I don't think I've actually really got into the proper mythos, the mythology of it.
It may be a parody, Dan, but I think Patrick Stewart is also the best portrayal of Robin Hood that's ever been committed to the silver or celluloid screen.
As actors go, he's probably the one who grew up the closest to where it's supposed to be set.
There you go.
Well, this is true. Maybe this is one of the things we'll find out, is where was he from originally, and is he real? Is it based on anybody? I hope it's not.
If only we had somebody who knew about Robin Hood.
I know. Mm. We could just talk here forever about it ourselves, couldn't we? But we have a very special guest who has been patiently waiting in the wings there. And we are about to introduce the Professor of Late Medieval and Reformation History from the Liverpool University, Dr. Martin Heal. Martin, welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Chaos.
Thanks, Paul. It's nice to be here.
Now, I have to declare an interest. Martin is a good friend of mine, known him for many, many years, and drinking buddies, film night buddies. It was only when he said one day that he'd been on a podcast about Robin Hood, and I thought, what? This man knows how to podcast and knows a bit about Robin Hood. So I listened to it, absolutely flabbergasted. I didn't know this man knew so much about Robin Hood. I mean, I guess I should have done, really, because he knows about medieval history and stuff. So, Martin, tell us, first of all, what do you do at Liverpool University? What is your obviously late medieval and Reformation history, but what does that entail?
Well, I teach undergraduates and PhD students about history of Middle Ages, medieval culture, society, belief about the Reformation. And I've just started teaching Robin Hood to MA students. So I teach them a bit about the medieval Robin Hood and then about how Robin Hood's stories and presentation changes over the Reformation and the 16th, 17th centuries.
Wow. Okay. So, Martin, who was Robin Hood?
Well, that's a question that historians, I guess, have been trying to answer for a couple of hundred years. Quite a lot of historians have tried to find a historical Robin Hood. So they've looked through lots of records from the 1100s, 1200s onwards, trying to find somebody called Robin or Robert Hood and work out, could this be the origin of the story? Robert Hood is actually quite a common name in the Middle Ages, and Robin is just a sort of shorter version, like Robbie. So it's kind of Robert, but just a sort of young man's name for Robert. Lots of Robert Hoods have been found, actually. Some of them criminals, some of them kind of bandits, some of them with intriguing similarities with early stories about Robin Hood, one who was in the king's court, which is what Robin Hood does in one of the main stories from the Middle Ages. So various attempts to convince people that people have found the real Robin Hood, but to be honest, none of them have ever really kind of won much support. So I don't think we've really got very close to establishing if there was actually an original outlaw. I mean, there were quite a lot of stories about outlaws in the Middle Ages, some of whom were real people. So there were stories about Hereward the Wake, who you might remember from school history, was the Anglo-Saxon leader who fought against William the Conqueror in the Fens. And there was a nice character called Eustace the Monk, who was a real monk who became a pirate and terrorized the Channel Islands for 20 years. So there are stories about real bandits, but there are also stories about people who are clearly just inventions. And ultimately, I think we'll ever know whether Robin Hood falls into one or other of those categories.
So when is the first mention of Robin Hood then?
Well, the first mention of stories of Robin Hood is from the 1370s. So there's quite a well-known poem called Piers Plowman, and it complains about people listening to Robin Hood stories instead of doing things they should be doing, like going to church. So we know from at least the 1370s there were stories of Robin Hood circulating, but they're probably around for earlier than that. And people seem to know of a character called Robin Hood as early as the mid-1200s, because people are given the nickname Robin Hood. So it seems like even 100 years before then, there were. So it goes back a long way. And he was pretty widely known. There were proverbs about him from the 1400s, which implies that everybody knows who he is. So he's widely known, widely popular, from maybe the 1300s, perhaps earlier.
But is it basically still the same story that we know from back then, or has it morphed over the years?
That's one of the interesting things about the Robin Hood legend, that it just constantly evolves. And actually, I think that's why we still love it, because it's changed. And even if you look at the history of Robin Hood in film in the 20th century, the story's changed quite a lot, and they're always finding new angles and new leases of life, like the spoofs we were hearing about, or the TV series where Maid Marian was the hero and Robin was a sort of fumbling fool. So it's a bit like Batman in that way. I think he can be kind of constantly reinvent and adapt the story for the time that it's written for. So it changes a lot. So the first version of Robin, he is an outlaw. He's mostly in Yorkshire, actually, rather than in Sherwood Forest, although sometimes in Sherwood. But he's an outlaw. He wears green. He helps the needy. He's got Little John, people like that with him. But he doesn't really rob the rich to help the poor. He helps poor knights, and so still people quite, you know, quite high up in society. He's quite religious, quite pious in the early stories. So there's some big differences. But perhaps the biggest difference is he's not set in the reign of Richard I in the Middle Ages. So there's just a kind of, he's not set in any particular time, but there's a King Edward, and all the Edwards were in the 1300s. So there's no connection with Richard I. And that doesn't change until the late 1500s, when he's kind of rewritten for genteel plays. And then at that point, they turn him into a dispossessed Earl, the Earl of Huntingdon. And they set him in the reign of Richard I, possibly because you can then make Prince John the enemy while he's still loyal to the king. So this is the reign where the king is overseas on crusade or in jail in Austria. And then there's a bad prince, his brother John. So this is perhaps a way to make Robin perhaps a little bit less dangerous. He's still loyal to the king, but he's fighting against this corrupt Prince John. So it's only later that it becomes based at that period. And then in the 19th century, Walter Scott writes from his novel Ivanhoe, which transforms Robin into a Saxon. So that's where we get this sort of the idea of Robin as this sort of Anglo-Saxon figure who is protecting his people against the corrupt Normans, which is, again, quite a staple in the 20th century films of Robin Hood, where he's presented in that way. So it evolves gradually over time, and there's lots of different versions of Robin.
I was just going to say, wasn't Maid Marian like a later addition as well?
Yes, that's right, Sean. Yeah, so she doesn't figure in. I think the earliest story she figures in is about 200 years after the first stories. So in the earlier stories, the only female figure, an important character, is the Virgin Mary, who helps Robin. So quite often she performs miracles to help him and kind of get one over his enemies. But then at the Reformation, when they decide that the Protestants decide they're not so keen on saints and the Virgin Mary, she disappears from the stories. And then it becomes a bit more of a kind of romance story with, you need a heroine, Robin's an earl, you need a kind of a glamorous princess type character. And that's how the Robin stories sort of shift. But by the 1500s, she's an important character.
Oh, and what about the Merry Men? I mean, this band of Merry Men, do they start at the beginning with Robin and then make their way through, or you know, do they still have the same band of men that originated and make their way through, or do we lose characters along the way?
We lose and gain characters, yeah. So in the earliest stories, there is a band with Robin. So there's a group of them. They're all young men who live in the forest, and it's always May in the stories, so it's always sunny, and they always hunt deer and have a great time. So they are merry from the very start. Little John is there from the start. Little John is a really important character in the very first Robin Hood stories that we have, and he's similar to the Little John we know. He's loyal, but he's bad-tempered. He and Robin often fall out, but then John saves the day. So that character has remained remarkably stable, actually, and is really important. We get very brief mentions to Much the Miller's son in an early story. In fact, what he does is kill a monk and the little boy who's travelling with him, so he doesn't come across all that well. And there's someone called William Scatherlock, who is the prototype for Will Scarlet. But they're not really fleshed out as characters, they're just mentioned briefly. Now, but over time, they become, you know, they get their own stories. And Friar Tuck's an interesting one. He's not in any of the early stories, but there's an early play from the late 1400s where he appears, and his character evolves a bit. At first, he's quite a grumpy friar with a pack of dogs who he sets on Robin, but then over time, he becomes this buffoonish kind of comic character, the one that we know and is also fleshed out more in Ivanhoe. Eleanor Dale, the minstrel, he's a later addition, so even then there are people being added. And then we get to the 20th century, and quite often the stories like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves adds a character from the East who Robin sort of met in his sort of easily called crusading. So even then, even recently, we're getting new characters added to the canon.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know where that had come from, because I originally read a small, thin, probably published by Penguin or Puffin or somebody like that, one of these little books that you get for kids with pictures and illustrations, and it was all about Robin Hood. And I can still remember to this day, I'd love to find it, see if I can actually find one of these copies, because it must have been, I don't know, late 60s, early 70s, depending on what age I was when I got it. But that was, to me, that was Robin Hood. That's what he was all about. And he was very much a, I can't remember what they called him, but whether it was, you know, the Earl of Huntingdon, or whether it was just Robin Hood, or whether it was Robin of Locksley, or what, but I seem to remember Robin of Locksley as a name. And at the end of it, of course, he dies by firing the arrow out the window, and he's buried at that point and all this type of thing. And that's the sort of image that I have with the Many Men, with Will Scarlet, with Much, and with, you know, Eleanor Dale and all these. So that to me is what it was, because it's like a first James Bond, isn't it? I mean, that's the person that James Bond is. It doesn't matter who they change him to later on. That's the one that you want. And so I was quite surprised last year. He says, thinking quickly, was last year. We went to Sheffield, and we stayed just outside Sheffield. And there was a place, we were going to go for a long walk, and it was up along a place called Stanage Edge, which is like a bit of a cliff face. It's only a small cliff, but it's a substantial cliff anyway. And there was a place there called Robin Hood's Cave, and we thought, oh right, okay, we're in Yorkshire, and they've pinched. Not Robin Hood from Nottingham, for goodness sake. Bloody Yorkshire people trying to do this, you know, they're claiming him for his own. And it was only when we got up there and we found the cave, and it was a great little place. Supposedly this is where he stayed at some point, which is a bit of a treacherous place to try and stay on the edge of a cliff, but there you go. And then, you know, sort of listening to your previous podcast on the English Heritage podcast that you did about Robin Hood, the interviewer there mentions about Locksley, and I thought, where is Locksley? I've never really known where Locksley is. And, you know, so I looked it up, and blow me if it's only just up the road from where we were at Stanage Edge. And I thought, hang on a minute, this guy's a Yorkshireman. I thought he was from Nottingham. What's all this business then?
Yeah, so, Locksley is in the outskirts of Sheffield, so you can go and visit that. I don't suppose it's all that interesting, but if you're going to do a Robin Hood tour, you should go to Locksley. Yeah, the first time Locksley's mentioned is a biography that somebody writes, we don't know who, in the late Elizabethan period, so late 1500s, somebody writes a biography of Robin Hood. So it just shows the, you know, fascination with him. Someone thinks, I'm going to write, fleshed out, you know, the story of his whole life. And that describes him as coming from Locksley. Although they say that, we don't know if Locksley's in Yorkshire or Nottinghamshire. So they're kind of hedging their bets. But it is in Sheffield, so it's in Yorkshire. Yeah, and one of the things we find in the early stories is the location is a bit of where Robin is based is a bit uncertain. So some of the stories, the earliest stories, he's in Barnsdale, which is in South Yorkshire, so not far from Sheffield. And the stories are quite specific about a particular place for the sales where highwaymen would wait. So just like in Dick Turpin's time, there are certain places in England which are notorious for highwaymen, because you're going through a gorge or something, or a narrow area with woods or something nearby. And so this was a place that was notorious for highwaymen robbing travellers. And that's where the early Robin stories, most of them are set in Barnsdale, sort of quite a forest, but that area of South Yorkshire. But having said that, there's also one or two mentions of him in Sherwood Forest. And he goes into Nottingham in one of the early stories and is captured there. And of course, it's the Sheriff of Nottingham from the start. I haven't mentioned him yet, but the Sheriff of Nottingham appears in the very first stories. So that's something that is a constant, really, throughout the whole. He's always the baddie, and he represents corrupt local officials. So the king is good, but the people he's delegated power to, you'd have one sheriff for every county who's supposed to ensure the king's law is enacted. He's corrupt, and Robin is Robin's enemy from the start. Robin often kills him, actually, in the early stories. They're quite bloodthirsty. So we've got these sort of differences of Yorkshire and Nottinghamshire, but Yorkshire, I think, probably has the prime claim to him. Locksley's there. Robin also dies. You mentioned the story of Robin dying and firing out the arrow. That happens in Kirklees Priory, which is quite near Huddersfield, so in West Yorkshire. So another part of the story that is based in that part of the country. Well, actually, the arrow firing out is a later story. That's something that's added 100 years later to make it a bit more of a glamorous ending, perhaps. But he is murdered by a relative who's a prioress in the medieval stories too.
Ah, I was going to ask that. How was he killed? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I can say a bit more about that if you like. So what happens is he's going to, in the first story, she's going to be bled, which phlebotomy was quite a common thing to do for medical care in the Middle Ages. The idea was that you should sometimes open up your veins and let out some blood to balance the humours in your body. So it was quite commonly done. It was thought to be a healthy thing to do. But Robin decided he'd be bled, and he had a relative, I think an aunt, who was the prioress of this small monastery priory, and she was going to do it. And Little John warns him that he should take men with him and be a bit more careful, but he ignores him. He goes to this priory, and there, this prioress has got a lover called Red Roger, or Roger of Doncaster, so another Yorkshireman. And between them, they decide, for reasons that aren't explained, to murder Robin. So they open up his veins and let him bleed to death. Robin kind of curses them and dies romantically. From the very start, Robin's quite a tragic figure. He's killed by a relative, by a woman, by a nun, and this is actually quite a common theme in stories of bandits all over the world, that a bandit has a tragic death and is always killed by deception. So they're a kind of man of the people, who can only be overcome by treachery, because that's a sort of fitting end for somebody who's sacrificially serving the people against injustice.
Well, that was really interesting. That was the one thing I wanted to ask you, is that do we find that there are lots of Robin Hood type figures in other cultures nearby? So just on Europe, or is it throughout the world that there are some, you know, these the underdogs who sort of rise up and fight against the upper classes or the higher echelons and sort of fight for the good?
Yeah.
Is it something that's sort of universal?
It's pretty universal, I think. Yes, it's a very great question. Because it implies that there is something universal about the Robin Hood story, which is perhaps one reason why it's lasted. Because I think it represents somebody a little bit outside the system who is fighting against injustice, fighting against corruption. In the early Robin Hood stories, it's partly corruption of local officials like the Sheriff of Nottingham, also corruption of the church in the early stories, powerful monasteries who exploit the poor. So I think there is a common theme. There are other medieval outlaws who, again, are quite violent, who again, stand up for right, but kind of live by their own rules. The vigilantes, I suppose you'd call them. But yeah, there's all around the world, there are stories of bandits who, especially in Latin America, they're very common there. Often peasant figures who perhaps are cast out of society or treated as criminals, but fight against authority figures who are corrupt and live by their own rules. And in some ways, I wonder if the gangster kind of trope that we all sort of, so many in Hollywood is so beloved, keen on, is a similar kind of thing. It's people who live outside of the rules of society, kind of outlaws, aren't they? But still, they have their own moral code. And they're very loyal, and they have rules that they follow. And there's sort of fascination with people who break the rules, but possibly, you might say, for the wider good, or just stick two fingers up at the officials or corrupt figures that make everyone's life difficult or exploit people. I think it's a universal thing.
Yeah, certainly down in my corner of the world, it's your Ronnie and Reggie Cray, yes. It's the legend that builds up around these people, even though they are just criminals, that's all they are. There's a sort of the wider mythology sort of builds up from it. Does it always base around, so all these different characters who are around the world, do they always base around like a particular weapon? Because the thing that I always associate with Robin Hood is archery. Has that always been the case, or is it, if there's a Robin Hood of India, is it based around like a typical Indian weapon that they kind of glamorize and they're glorifying to try and, get young boys into the army kind of thing? Is it actually a recruitment tool that just went a bit too far?
Yeah, interesting. I think it's probably varies with, whether the weapon is most appropriate. So it might be the craze, it might be guns, or I think the archery is interesting. Robin also fights with sticks. He's not a very good kind of fighter with staves. He usually loses the fights he has, but he's the best archer. And yeah, archery was a really important skill in the Middle Ages. In fact, you were kind of required to be good at it, because you were required to practice butts by law in case you were called upon to serve as archers, because the archers were the kind of mainstay of the English armies in the Hundred Years' War. So there is certainly cachet about being a brilliant archer. And I suppose also the archery is a weapon of the common soldier. So a knight would fight with a sword. So it feels like it's the kind of common man's weapon. Mm. So it kind of shows. I mean, Robin in the early stories is from the middling, and he's called, described as a yeoman, which is someone in the middle of society. So not a peasant, not someone really poor, but certainly not an aristocrat. Somewhere in the sort of every man type figure. So I think his use of bow and arrow and his great skill at bow and arrow kind of locates him as a man of the people rather than a brilliant sword fighter like Zorro or Princess Bride or something like that.
Yeah, I mean the whole link with archery is still there because if you've done archery and you know that if you fire an arrow into a target and then you fire a second arrow and it splits the first arrow, or in modern day arrows they're hollow and they can actually enter the arrow and end up with one inside the other, it's called a Robin Hood. So, and you can do it again and get a third one in and get a triple Robin Hood. So it's quite a thing to do. I've only ever seen one, and they are very rare. They do happen, but it is incredibly rare to see them. So it's still got links to archery at the moment. So obviously you teach Robin Hood. Do you have any like reference books or books that you use that you could recommend to people maybe to sort of learn a bit more about Robin Hood, other than joining your classes and coming up to Liverpool for a few weeks?
I mean, I ought to kind of plug the books of the people I know who write on Robin Hood, really, because I got a bit of a personal connection to it. And one of the things that got me interested in it is my PhD supervisor wrote one of the first books on academic books on Robin Hood in the 1970s, which included modern versions of the stories that you could read, a guy called Barry Dobson. And actually, my history teacher at school, his father was a quite a well-known historian called James Holt, and he wrote a really good book called Robin Hood, which is about the medieval version and the medieval kind of stories. And so he's called James Holt's Robin Hood is really good. A little bit older now. There's a guy called Stephen Knight who's written about Robin Hood more from a kind of literary point of view, but he's written about the stories all the way through from the earliest stories right up to the films. So if you're kind of interested in just the long transition of Robin Hood, including Robin Hood in popular culture, and Stephen Knight wrote called the Robin Hood a complete history, something like that. And if you want more academic books, I'm writing a chapter in a book that is going to be published in the next year, hopefully, which is called Historians on Robin Hood, which is about different parts of medieval life and what the Robin Hood stories have to say about them. So someone's going to write on outlaws or law, someone's going to write on social mobility, someone's going to write on women, and I'm writing a chapter on piety and anti-clericalism, so the church, there's a religious element of it. So I'll let you know when that's published, and you can perhaps plug that for me as well.
Yeah, of course we will. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, around those times of Robin Hood, did medieval history, you always see it as peasants working the land, and the lords and gentry, living it up in the castles, in the big houses, stately homes. What about the people in the towns and in the sort of in the middle, if you like? What was life like for them?
In England, at least, there weren't that many places that we would recognise as towns. So a lot of the towns of the day, I mean, the big regional towns like York or Norwich, which are important places, had about 10,000 people living in them, which to us would be, we see it as a small town or even a large village, maybe, quite kind of concentrated. And London had about 50,000 people, and that was much bigger than anywhere else. There were bigger places bigger towns in Italy and Northern Europe. So even the towns were fairly small. So we need to think of them as semi-rural, with pigs wandering around and people living with them. Houses quite compact, so wooden houses within walls for protection. Probably very smelly and dirty, so there were certain industries like tanning, dealing with leather, that used urine and other sort of things, and would stink. and would be kind of on shunted on the edge of the town. So probably dirty and smelly, cramped, fire risk. So yeah, towns were not very healthy places. Disease would spread in them more. But they were also kind of perhaps exciting places, because if you moved to a town, you didn't have a lord, so you were by definition free. So once you were sort of accepted as a townsman, you wouldn't have to sort of pay money or dues to any lords. You were independent and free. Probably more opportunities for different kinds of work, as an artisan or a craftsperson. Women could work and own businesses as well. So, and possibly places for a bit more independence, and not quite so much, not quite so stifling perhaps as village life. So, but yeah, places that you might move to for you know, a more interesting life or for a bit of freedom.
Wow, fascinating. It's a sort of period of time that I am sort of interests me more than any other period of time, if you like, is the simple country folk life, you know, that you have out there. And like you say, the towns that are so small and there's very few people in it. And so the population then have more space, if you like, to sort of, you know, a bit more sort of freedom to move around. Now you know, if you try getting into London, you start from about 50 miles out and work your way in. And it's just one big paved area, basically. It's an immense place, but thinking of 50,000 people, that's incredible. I mean, that even the area we live in now, I don't think has that many people. 40,000, I think it is. So to think of the area that, you know, where we are now, where me and Martin are now, is as big as London was back then. It's quite a thing.
And a lot of the country was forested, of course. Yes. So that kind of, and perhaps helps to explain the appeal of someone like Robin Hood, who lives in the forest, a place that people would know of and perhaps romanticise.
Yeah, that's right. Because, I mean, at one point, the whole of the UK was a forest, wasn't it? So the saying goes that you could walk from, you know, the very tip of one end of the country to the other on the top of the trees. Yeah, then, of course, you know, along comes man and forests it all and deforests it all, rather. And we have what we have now, which is basically fields and very little forest. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been a more interesting time then. It would have been more sort of forest area, places to hide, highwaymen to jump out at you. So, yeah. Okay, so I think, Sean, have you got a question that you wanted to... to ask,
I wanted to know if you think that he was actually a real person, or was it a group of people, or that kind of thing? Like, is it a historical fact, or is it more like a King Arthur thing where it's all legend and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing, but my hunch is the second of those. Yeah, and King Arthur is a nice comparison, actually, because King Arthur, there were lots of stories about him in the Middle Ages as well that people told to entertain themselves. So I think we can think about the Arthurian stories, we can think about the Robin Hood stories, as the stories that medieval people like to tell each other for entertainment and for, you know, just for amusement. So just as, you know, we have stories that we know aren't real, and we enjoy them for that reason. It's the kind of it's the imagination that we like. I think that's what Arthur represented in the Middle Ages, and I think that's probably what Robin Hood did as well. And certainly a lot of the stories in the early Robin Hood tales, we can find those same stories told elsewhere or versions of them. So there are other outlaw tales where very similar things happen. Some of the plots come from miracle stories, the Virgin Mary, so we can kind of see them being pieced together. So in other words, you've got a good story and then you attach it to Robin Hood, and also the stories are so diverse. Robin Hood is a bit different in all the stories that we've got, and we've only got about 5 stories from the Middle Ages, and most of them survive in one single manuscript, so we're incredibly lucky that we've got them. It's just by chance that we have them. So I think we need to assume that there were lots of other stories, and Robin is slightly different in each of them. He's quite jovial in some, he's quite violent in others. Some are in Yorkshire, some are in Nottinghamshire. So you just get the sense of a character that is represents something for people, and is really kind of enjoyed and widely known. And you just, you know, people are just coming up with new stories or attaching them to this character. So there are a certain number of things that are always there, like with Doctor Who or James Bond, and certain constants. But within that, you can there's so much you can do with it. Everyone knows it. People enjoy it. So I think I would see Robin Hood stories as being, you know, just the really popular literature that people enjoy to weave right. stories right. in, rather than, you know, I think it's slightly reductive to sort of reduce it, something like that, to an actual thing. It's so much more interesting and varied and fun than that.
So like somebody wanted to tell a story, so they just threw the Robin Hood character in there to make it relatable.
Yeah, exactly. And also to make it popular, because people are going to listen to it because they love Robin Hood.
Because that would have been the popular culture of the day.
Yeah, so they're called ballads, and we don't know if they were sung. They may well have been recited, but you know, you can imagine kind of minstrels traveling around, and people would say, you know, they would give us a tale of Robin Hood, and also people would have quite regular celebrations where someone would dress up as Robin Hood. So it would be a bit like sort of church fetes in sort of the early summer. And if you were raising money, Robin Hood was a really good fundraiser. So we got lots of examples from church accounts from the point in the 1500s of somebody dressing up as Robin Hood, someone dressing up as Little John. A bit later, they might have made Marian as well. And they would organize festivities. They might have a play. They might have an archery contest or a kind of a wrestling match or something like that. So lots of kind of activities. And then Robin Hood and Little John would go around with, you know, buckets or something and collect money. And people seem parishes seem to save Robin Hood collections when they really needed money, like the church roof has fallen off or something, because he's such a good fundraiser. Because you can go around and say, you know, are you a merry man or are you the sheriff of Nottingham? And if you refuse to give to him, then you're kind of associated with the badness. And everyone knows who he is and everyone likes him. So it's actually a really great way, a bit like Father Christmas, you know, great. Dressing up with lots of goodwill, and you can get people to kind of give money. So there's that element of the Robin Hood kind of.
So I like that. I like that sentence. Robin Hood was a very good fundraiser. A bandit is what most people call him. An outlaw is another, but a fundraiser is a new one.
Yeah. One man's bandit is another man's fundraiser. I love it. That should be a t-shirt.
Yeah. And you know what else should be a t-shirt? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
Ask yourself, is the Flopcast the right podcast for you?
Do you have trouble picking a favorite Weird Al song, Karate Kid sequel, or Justice League Detroit member? Are you obsessed with Cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch, Vicky the Captain's daughter from the Love Boat?
Or Vicky the robot from Small Wonder?
Do you think Cyndi Lauper's We Are the World solo is the most important event in history?
Do you have half an hour a week for something completely stupid?
Then the Flopcast might be the right podcast for you.
We're on the ESO Network
and at flopcast.net.
So, Martin, what would you say is your favorite or the most accurate portrayal of Robin Hood on screen?
It's a hard question, isn't it? Because like you guys, I grew up with the Robin Hood of the Disney film. But as I remember, many didn't like tax. So that feels like quite an American version of Robin Hood.
Yes.
The baddies, isn't there? The tax collector, which I wouldn't necessarily go along with. And I also grew up with Robin of Sherwood, which is a TV series with Jason Connery and Michael Pryde played that part.
Yes.
So those are my early Robin Hoods. But I think actually now my favorite Robin Hood film might be, I don't know what it's called, but the Sean Connery one. Do you know that one? I mean, Robin and Marian, it's called. So if you haven't seen it's from the mid 70s. So Sean Connery, who appears, doesn't he, as King Richard in Prince of Thieves? Yeah. So they bring him back. Yeah. But he's actually Robin in this. And Audrey Hepburn is Maid Marian. And Robert Shaw is a Sheriff of Nottingham. So it's got a wonderful cast. And that's what I like about it is it's got the kind of the sort of tragic Robin that is faithful, as I mentioned, to the early stories. So, I mean, I don't want to spoil it completely, but Robin has a tragic end in the, you know, with the kind of the nunnery and that story of the poisoning. I quite like it. It's a different, it's not the kind of the more Hollywood Robin that, you know, where he kind of swashbuckles and defeats everybody and wins the women. You know, it's a very different and quite poignant and and sad take on the Robin Hood story, which to me kind of feels quite authentic in that it draws on some of these early stories. And also it's got great people in it, you know, John Connery and Audrey Hepburn. You can't really,
Can't go wrong there.
Well, yeah.
So if you haven't seen that one, and yeah, Paul, you talked about doing film nights, and then maybe you can do a Robin Hood film night.
Absolutely.
I recommend that as a different and really kind of interesting.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. We'll do that. We'll see if, see if Snips have got it, and or if we can find it online somewhere, we can watch it that way. Yeah, that's a great shout. We'll do that, and we'll do a double Robin Hood.
Yeah, Errol Flynn out maybe.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. Yeah, I haven't seen that in a long time because that's the one I sort of grew up with, and my sister Julie, she likes that one as well. Good old, you know, swashbuckling, like you say, with a bit of sword fighting in there as well.
Well, you could go back to Douglas Fairbanks and the Silent.
You certainly could.
Yeah,
you certainly could. So Sean, which would be your favourite take on Robin Hood? Which film would you say I'm going to watch the film about Robin Hood? Which one would you pick?
I don't know because I don't have enough familiarity with any of them.
Well, you've got to take Men in Tights. Absolutely.
I don't think I would. I'm not a fan of parody films. You know, I hate Spaceballs, I probably hate Men in Tights too. So,
well, okay, yeah, that is true. I mean, this is almost a parody of parodies because it actually parodies Kevin Costner's version of the film, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Which, and
yeah, that's right. It's and which I mean, Kevin Costner's almost you could say almost a parody of other films. It's just it's not quite as serious. It's got, you know, it is a serious film, but it does have a lot of humor in it. I just wish that they would use an English person. I know they've used Taron Egerton recently. I haven't seen that film, so I don't know. And it doesn't look as though it's that popular, to be honest. But yeah, that there's hardly any English people that have actually played Robin Hood. So, which is a bit of a shame. Dan, you put a shout out to our Facebook page, and is there anybody who's come up with their favourite term?
Yeah, actually, the Robin and Marian did come up. I put it on our Instagram. Robin and Marian did come up. That came into our DMs from various people. The 80s TV show, that was another one that kind of shout out as well. There was two or three people there. The Disney version seems to be the most popular one. That's the one that's come across quite a lot, lots of people. I think people just want to have the excuse to sing Oodle-Ally, Oodle-Ally, golly, what a day. The only other one being Prince of Thieves. And I think that's the one I would go to the most because I've seen it the most, but mainly because of Alan Rickman. So I kind of watch it more for the villain than I do for Robin Hood, as it were, because I think I just want to see someone gouge his heart out with a spoon. Because it will hurt more. I love it. But, you know, you've got so many other movies that are not Robin Hood, but they're, you know, you can see the inspiration comes. Like, you've got your Hawkeyes in the Avengers. You've got your Green Arrows in DC Universe. You've got Katniss Everdeen from Hunger Games. You know, you've got the hero with the bow and arrow who sort of fits the mold. So I'm always wondering what the next thing, you know, is there a future? Have they done this story too much, do you feel, Martin? Do you feel like they're ever going to run out of a point of reinterpreting it, or is there a future for Robin Hood?
Yeah, it's interesting. The last two Robin Hood films that haven't done that well, have they? The Russell Crowe one and the Taron Egerton one. So it's not easy to keep reinventing it. But, you know, it's been going strong since probably at least the 1260s. So, and not really, I suppose there's been ebbs and flows over that time. But so I suspect that it will continue, and you know, someone will come up with another take, or just a really great version of it. In the same way that I've mentioned Batman already, but that does not show any signs of losing its power and its ability to be kind of reimagined. So yeah, I wouldn't write off Robin Hood. I think, you know, it's hard to think actually of a hero that we have today with a longer kind of backstory, with a greater longevity than Robin Hood has. So. And as we were mentioning, there's that universality of an everyman figure who lives by their own rules, and confronts corruption. As long as we I think we need someone like that.
Can we consider the Dukes of Hazzard Robin Hood take? Because you know they had bow and arrows. They were outlaws. They had a band of merry men. They had some evil sheriffs.
Fighting a sheriff. Yeah. No, I think that's right. Yeah. I mean, that's my question for you, Sean. What are the North American kind of versions of this? Do you think
that's probably about it, actually? that and Green Arrow, like the arrow, like we mentioned. I can't really think of too much else.
Yeah, I think I'm glad it stopped at the Dukes of Hazzard, to be honest. So, is that it, guys? Are we all our questions answered? Sean, do you feel as though you know a lot more about Robin Hood than when you first started at the beginning of the show?
Oh, much more. Yes.
A lot more. Yeah. But I want to learn more. This is fascinating. I want to see where all these different versions of him came from history. So, yes, thank you very much, Martin.
Pleasure.
Yeah, I've always liked the story of Robin Hood. I now know where I can go and learn more from it. Down our local pub, and after a couple of pints, we'll be well there.
That's something you should record.
Maybe not. And thank you very much, Martin, for coming along. And this has probably been one of our better shows, to be honest, with a good subject matter and a person who is an expert on it to inform us and educate us is always welcome.
So you talk about medieval history every week, right?
Oh, of course we do. Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, I thought,
That's why it's known as the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, because they had pizza back in those days.
Yes. That's a version of pizza, yeah.
Okay, so again, thanks very much, Martin, for coming along. And our special is gone, and the grease in the box is cold, and we hope you are full to the brim. So join us for more slices of life in the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. We've been your deliverers today. Please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries. Rate and review our service, and we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and TikTok by searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you'd like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us on cosmicpizzapodcast@gmail.com, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.